Well, or that was the Fox one.
That was the Fox one.
This Amateur Radio Roundtable is brought to you in part by ICOM America.
Hello, guys. You're listening and watching Amateur Radio Roundtable. I'm Tom Medlin, W5KUB, and this is September 15th, 2020. Boy, let me turn the echo off. Always leave that echo on there just to see if people in the chat room will catch it here. Hey, if you're listening out there on an international shortwave station tonight on shortwave on 5130, you can join our show if you have internet access. Just go to w5kub.com and click on video there, and you can watch the show. You can actually enter the chat room, talk with us during the show, and talk to other people around the world. Also, if you don't have internet there, maybe you'll get access to email or something later today. Send us an email. I'd like to hear from you and where you are and where you're hearing 5130, and give us a signal report there. The net tonight, the signals were actually pretty good on a 40-meter net tonight. Boy, we had quite a few people on there and some great signals. The band's starting to get a little better, I think. Actually, even heard my son Chris down in Austin, Texas, and chatted with him a couple minutes there on there. So we know it's working better because he's been fighting that HOA antenna problem. Join our Facebook group. We've got a great Facebook group. We've got over 10,600 hams in our Facebook group. It's a great ham radio group. Just search for W5KUB, and that's our group. Or if you want to search for the long name, you can search for Amateur Radio Roundtable, and you'll get to the same place there. Let's see. We had we had Glenn Popiel join us here a minute ago. Let's jump out there and look at all of our remotes here and see who is here tonight. Let's go first out to – first, let me say hi to Glenn. So, Glenn, pop in there.
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
There you go. Now, what were you doing tonight? You were late.
Yeah, I know. I'll take my demerits.
Yeah, you're going to get
demerits. Actually, I'm going to be late, and I'm leaving early, so this is going to be a regular work day for me. I had my times backward. I cannot calculate Mountain Standard Time to save my life. And I have a presentation for the Superstition Amateur Radio Club in Mesa, Arizona here in about an hour. And
yeah.
I was at our local club meeting just before, and that ended up, you know, I got three of them back-to-back tonight.
Well, you know, here in the continental United States, we only have four time zones, and we're central. So mountain isn't too difficult to calculate, man.
Well, actually, there's a fifth time zone.
Yeah, where is that?
It's the Mississippi time zone.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
You got to turn your watch back an hour and 10 years.
You're right. I forgot about that.
I
forgot you were down there. Okay. Well, great, man. Well, good to see you. And if you have to leave early, that's okay, man. Appreciate you being here. Let's see. Let's jump over to let's say hi to Alan. Hey, Alan, how you doing, man?
All right. Good evening, Tom. Good evening, everybody. Nice to be back on my second show here. And we'll talk a little bit with tech tips. And I think I mentioned earlier that we may stick around the whole time, might not, on a little bit of painkillers. Had a two-hour sit in the dentist chair today and to remove my last wisdom teeth. So we'll see how much wisdom I've got left.
So you're actually lighter today than you were yesterday by a little bit.
Just a little bit.
They removed a little bit there. Okay, well, sometimes that's no easy job, getting your wisdom teeth taken out. But you look like you're doing good there, man. I tell you, you're a trooper. Thanks for being on
okay.
here. Thanks for being on here tonight.
All right.
And we're going to do you first, your segment first, because if you start getting sleepy on us, you can go to bed, okay?
Yeah, if I fall head first into the keyboard there.
That's right. That's right. Well, look, hey, the other guest we got on here is a good friend of mine, Skip Morris, over in Middle Tennessee. Skip, how you doing tonight?
Tom, doing very well, thank you, and appreciate the invitation here tonight to talk about mainly towers and tower safety. And enjoy. This is, I believe, the second time that I've been on your program. I guess it's last year sometime. And yeah. At that time, I was in Collierville in Tennessee. And at your house, and enjoyed that very much. And I guess we've been over here for 3 years and moved here from Memphis. And it's a very quiet part of the country. And it's in Middle Tennessee between Nashville and Knoxville off of I-40. And so we hope to give your audience here an outlook, a frame of tower safety. That's been my very biggest concern here in the last couple of years, and I've been a ham now for about 60 years. I feel old.
Did you say 60? 60?
60? Yes, sir.
Yeah. See, you must have got your license when you were like 3, because I've been licensed 56 years. I don't know how long. 1964. You must have got your license in the 50s.
I started in the, I guess, working to get a ham license in the late 50s. And then I think my first call sign, WA4EPF, was issued in 61. So
okay.
I go way back.
You do, man. You go way back. So we're going to do several things tonight. We're going to show your dream ham shack that you built. You just built this new house. You got about a 1,200-foot ham shack here. You got all kinds of equipment that's been refurbished, and you collect. And we'll talk tower safety and a few things like that.
Yes, all right. Well, thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Yeah, just stick around here. Okay, so let's do this. Alan, let me get you in here, and let's just jump right in the program here about that one's not going to work for you there. Let's see. We'll try that one right there. Yeah, Alan, come in here, Alan.
There we go.
There you go. Okay. Got you in there now. Okay, so, yeah, tonight, Alan and I were talking about, I mean, we can put some really technical things on, and Alan can really explain them, or we can put some more simpler things on, and I thought tonight a little more simpler might be pretty good. We're going to talk about power poles tonight, and let me tell you, if you've never done one, you're probably going to go out to YouTube and pull up a video just to see how that thing slides in and how it connects and all those kind of things. And there's a good way to do it. There's a bad way to do it. But I actually went to YouTube here a year or two ago. And actually, I didn't see Alan's video. But Alan, talk to us about power pole.
Sure.
And how great they are, man.
Yeah, so, yeah, actually, the topic came up, I guess, last week. We went technical last week with the nano VNA and all that stuff, so we'll go a little bit low-tech this time, but something that just about every ham can relate to. Katie brought up the fact that she was looking at one of these rig runner power distribution modules that you apply power to it, and then it's got a bunch of power pole connectors on it to connect everything up in your shack. And so I thought I did a video on that a couple years ago, and because they are really popular connectors. I've got a couple just the housings here. And one of the things that I like about them is that they're pretty rugged. There's a number of different sizes. This particular housing size that I'm holding here can be put together for 15-amp, 30-amp, or 45-amp connectors. And they're all interchangeable. The contacts are different because of the size of the wire that they get. This is a contact here. I'm not sure how well it'll come up on the webcam. But this size that I have here is one that is a 30 amp, and they just vary by the size wire that they can take. But you do have to take some care in properly assembling them so that they stay reliable and they don't fall apart. But one of the things that's nice about them is that there's no male or female connector. They essentially mate with themselves. So they're a little bit ambidextrous that way, or I'm sure there's another word for it that I can't think of right now. Like I said, they took that last wisdom tooth out, so I forgot all of that stuff. But they go together nice. The connectors have got some neat little features. If you look carefully at the housings, I'll say how well I can catch the light on these things here. You see these little kind of protrusions and grooves. They're actually dovetails, and they can actually slide the two housings together, just like that. And now you've got a mated pair. And as long as you put them together in the right orientation, which I actually did them backwards here, put them together in the right orientation, you can always mate them. I can't get these apart now. I'll grab another set. So there's an orientation that's kind of been adopted by Aries and Races, and I'm kind of holding it at that orientation here. And that's with, if you take a look at the end of the connector, right at the end on the top here, there's a little A that's imprinted in the plastic, and my webcam probably isn't high enough resolution to show that. I might just be able to see it. And if you hold them so that when you're facing them and the A is facing you and can be read properly, the red is on the right. So that's how I remember which orientation to put them on. So put the red on the right. And then once you do that, everything that will mate to that, then later on, as long as you get all the, you always keep that same convention, you can't mate them the wrong way. So they'll always mate up properly when you connect them together. Some people complain about them in that they don't really snap together and hold together really tight. But so if you pull any pressure on them, they'll pull apart. But there is this little hole going through the center of them. And West Mountain Radio and a couple of other people sell a little clip that you can use to kind of clamp the two together. And even a small wire tie can go in there to clamp them together if you want to kind of hold them more in place. But it does take a little bit of care to properly assemble the wire to the contacts. And what I thought I'd do, Tom, is maybe I'll share where my video is. I'm not going to play the whole video because the whole thing's 9 minutes long. But I'll show you where you can find the video, and I'll show you where there's some links where you can jump through the video just to get to what you need here. So let me do a quick little share of my video screen here. So can you see
Alan, and while you're pulling it up, why don't you look at? I've got a few power poles here.
Oh, there you go. Well, there's some big ones there.
I think these are. I don't know, maybe more than 100 amp, I don't know.
Yeah, I've seen those for like connecting up to electric snow plows and stuff like that in the front of trucks. So it's but to probably connect a welder up to that thing. So yeah, so this we kind of went over my YouTube channel last week, but it's just youtube.com/mycallsign W2AEW. And if you search for video number 120, okay, that's the video that I did here, actually, almost 7 years ago, on how to assemble the power poles. And what I did recently, I went through here and I took advantage of a new feature in YouTube that allows you to essentially create chapters. And if you notice, as I mouse along the bottom here, I can see this first chapter is kind of lit up in this bar graph is an introduction and what length to strip the wires to. Then the next little block right here is the dovetails and how they mate together, like I just showed you. The third one here is kind of this standard orientation that I mentioned, with the right on red if you put the hood down on the bottom. It's kind of like I showed you. And then how to orient the contacts. We kind of go over to this thing here. Let me see if I can pull that part of the video up just so you can kind of see the picture here. So this is how the contacts get oriented. So if you're holding the connector or the housing with the hood on the top, the end of the contact with the loop dropping down kind of faces down towards like where that A is printed on the bottom. So that's the direction that they get put in when you assemble them after you essentially mate the terminals to the end of the wire. So the next thing, and when it comes down to putting the terminal on the end of the wire, there are two schools of thought. And one is crimping them with a proper crimping tool, and the other is soldering. And I've got my opinions on that, and I'll certainly share them with you here now. The terminals were originally designed, and most of these types of terminals are designed for crimping. And, you know, crimping, when done properly with the right set of tools, creates a gas-tight it creates a gas-tight cold weld between the wire and the terminal itself. So even I'm involved pretty heavily in the military and aerospace industry. Anything that is going on in aircraft and things like that, as part of a wiring harness, all those terminals are typically just crimped and not soldered. Anything that goes into spacecraft, things like that, are all crimped and not soldered. Most people will see that terminals that are on wiring harnesses in automobiles are typically crimped, not soldered, and you might make the argument that that's done mainly just for mass production for speed. But the reality is that a properly done crimp is more reliable than a soldered connection, especially for anything where there may potentially be any kind of motion between, say, the terminal and the wiring harness. If there's any kind of tension on it, or there's potential for any kind of vibration or motion. If you look at the power poles are manufactured by a company called Anderson Power Products, and they've got an application note, an assembly sheet, and the assembly sheet talks about crimping, and it also does talk about soldering. It does say that crimping is preferred. Soldering can be done, but you've got to be really careful, because the clearances involved with when this little metal housing, let's see if I can get a good picture of that back here. You know, the tolerances involved between these housings after it's crimped and inside of the plastic housing itself is actually pretty tight. And if you get any extra solder anywhere, you know, on the terminal itself, it may not slip in properly or may not mate properly. So you can solder them carefully if you just get solder on the inside of the terminal. But I really recommend getting the right tool. And there's a couple of people that make them. The one I'm showing here in the video here, let me get a better picture of it if I can, is this TriQuimp. I'm getting a lousy picture. Let me find a good picture. Here we go, right there maybe. Yeah. This one from TriCrimp. I recommend – I use this one, but there's a couple of others that are out there. A couple of real quick websites I'll show you here. This is the Anderson Power Pole website. There's a lot of information on here that you can go look up if you'd like. There's a number of distributors throughout the country that sell the Anderson Power Pole products. One here on the East Coast that I buy some things from is this Quicksilver Radio, and they've got the Power Pole products. You can just click on that, and they sell sets of them, and they sell some zip cord. They sell the tools. They sell kits that have got the tools and things like that in them as well, and as well as all the terminals and things separately. Another one that is another very popular one throughout the country, they're based in California, is PowerWorks, W-E-R-X, PowerWorks. Again, they sell kits and things like that, and also that's where they've got this one called TriCrimp, which is the one that I have here, is the TriCrimp unit. West Mountain Radio is another distributor that has a lot of the power pole products, and they've got their version of that of the tool, and they call theirs the PWR crimp, or power crimp, as opposed to the tri-crimp that comes from PowerWorks. But if you look at them very carefully, they're literally the same crimper with just a different colored handles. So, and they're both, you know, in the neighborhood of $40. And, you know, some people say, well, I don't want to spend $40 on a crimper for just connecting up, you know, one set of wires. And the way I look at it is, you know, I've done, you know, a couple of dozen with mine, but I've lent it out probably a dozen times to hams in the club and other friends and things like that. And if you're involved in an amateur radio club, you might approach the club and say, why doesn't the club just buy a set? Okay. And then anybody in the club who wants to use it can borrow it. And it's a pretty small investment for a club, probably about the same as a year or two's dues for the club to buy a set to have as a club resource. And that's a really great way to make sure that everybody in the club is getting their connectors on right and getting to have a crimping party after a club meeting, for example. Everybody brings their radios and their wires over and puts all the connectors on. So it's kind of a nice way to do that. So, again, I'm not going to play through the video, but I just wanted to kind of show, you know, doing a crimp properly. Actually, after you strip the wires and crimp, let me do a crimp here. The crimp actually becomes a really tight, you know, and there's no protrusions on it. You know, some of these cheap little crimpers you get at Home Depot and things like that will splay things out quite a bit, and you won't get a real clean crimp on that. Let me see if I can get a better picture here. Here we go. So here's a really nice clean crimp that you get. And again, a properly crimped joint, as I mentioned, will do a cold weld between the wires and the housing itself and allows for more flexibility. One of the problem that is typically, you know, talked about when you're talking about soldering connectors like this is that you get solder in there, especially in stranded wire. You get all the solder that wicks down in between all the strands, and that creates a very rigid, you know, group of wires, okay, even more rigid than a solid core piece of wire. And then as soon as that where that solder ends, now the wire is flexible at that point, and you basically create a fracture point there. And as you know, solder is relatively soft metal, okay, but it doesn't really bend. What it'll do is if you bend it after it's been, you know, heated and actually applied, if you bend a solder joint, the solder typically fractures. It doesn't bend. So if you have any kind of potential for motion between the wires and the terminals when you use them, you're really better off crimping with the proper tools. If you can put good strain reliefs on it, things like that, and be judicious with the solder, you can get away with that. Typically, you know, I'm not against the soldering, and even Anderson PowerPole says you can do it, but just have to do it carefully. So, but that's, you know, that's really what it comes down to. There are, like I said, three different sizes terminals that made up in these same size housings that we typically use. The 15 amp terminals will accept wires from 20 gauge to 16 gauge. The 30 amp terminals will accept wire gauge from 16 to 12 gauge. And then the 45 amp terminals will accept from 14 to 10 gauge wire. And I even went so far as on one of my little rigs here. I mean, you can see that in the little video if you're still seeing that. Actually, what I'll do is let me stop sharing, and that might be easier. So even on my little FT817, I found somebody who was selling a little 3D printed housing that mounts on the back. If anybody has one of these 817s, you know, it's just a little coaxial power plug. But this little housing has got the coaxial power plug and then houses a pair of, let me see if I can get the light shining on this right here. A little set of power poles right in there. So you can plug, power right into here without having that little wire kind of come out. With the little coaxial plug kind of coming out here. So kind of a neat little housing I found somebody selling on eBay. So I've kind of converted just about everything I have here to the power poles. Once you've got all your wiring harnesses all done that way, it makes for really nice connections. You can use one of those rig runner power distribution blocks like Katie showed last week. I've got a smaller one up in my shack. But I'm a fan of them. And like I said, one other thing I'll do here, let me do a quick little reshare again. I just want to kind of give you some other resources here. So again, the video is number 120 on my channel. And if you go down below the video, there's the little table of contents that allow you to skip through the video to look at just the portion you want to see. And I've also got some links there for Anderson Power, Quicksilver Radio, PowerWorks, and West Mountain Radio, and there's a number of other folks where you can find things like that. But you know, a lot of resources there that are available to you. And I guess a lot of people like the video because there's been a little over 200,000 people that have watched this in the last 7 years. So, I think we're only 56 people didn't like it. So it's that's not too bad.
Not bad at all.
Yeah, one more thing about those crimpers is you can also change out the dies and do coax and regular crimp lugs as well.
Absolutely.
I love those things.
Yeah, so the screws right here allow you to change these die out. I've got a set that will do like BNC connectors for like RG58 cable, things like that. I've got some nice ones for that. You can get dies that will fit for you know, SU239 crimp on connectors and things like that. And again, a properly done crimp with a good tool is as reliable, if not more reliable, than a soldered joint.
They actually have them for the RJ45 computer cables as well.
Those are actually, we'll call it a crimp, but it's actually, it's called an insulation displacement connector.
Yeah.
Okay, it was a set of terminals that have like little sharp little forks in it that pierce the insulation when you essentially crimp it down. So it's a form of a crimp. It's just not it's not deforming, you know, the little metal terminal. It's rather than it's forcing a couple of sharp fingers down into the wire, piercing through the insulation. But the concept is still the same.
Yeah, I like the die with the tri crimp there for that because it just gets a much better crimp than anything else I've used.
I'll have to get one of those. I think because I've got one of the cheapy home center ones for the RJ45, so I need to get the good terminal for this the tri crimp. Yeah, so that's what I was actually thought I might even crimp one on, you know, right here on camera if someone wanted to see that, because I've got a kind of a bare wire here, and it's interesting in the video I show that once you strip the wire, I put a nice tight twist on that. But in thinking about it and talking with some folks afterwards, it's probably not a good idea because you really want the crimp to not, you know, smash into those crossed over wires. So I just put just enough of a twist on it to ensure that I can get all of the wires inside the terminal without any problem. And then the crimper is kind of nice in that you lay the terminal. Let me see if I got to try and do this so I can see it on camera here. The terminal just kind of lays in there on the shelf, and there's a stop, so it stops as far as it's going to go. And then the crimper is kind of a self-releasing type of a thing. You can hear a click maybe. And when it reaches its stopping point, it'll do a little bit of a louder click, and then it will release. And then once you've got that, you've got a really nice, clean, crimped terminal there. And then this goes in the housing. Again, I'm doing it so I can see it, but I want to try and do it so you can kind of see it on camera here. Again, with the little roof of the housing on top, might be easier to see on the red one. Or maybe I'll do it on the bottom, then you can see that. You want this little hook to kind of face away from the roof. So if I put the roof on the bottom, the terminal is going to go in this direction, and you slip that in there, and you'll hear it snap in, and then it hooks in on the retention spring, and you're good to go. Except, of course, I put the black wire in the
red. I was going to say that. Hey, one thing. You can reuse those. You can actually get that out of there and reuse it.
Yeah, you can. I guess they sell it. I know that Anderson Power sells a tool for that, but you could probably do it with a nice thin-bladed screwdriver or something
right.
like that.
Yeah,
too.
I've done that.
Yeah. I've got both the tool and a jeweler's screwdriver, and they both work about the same.
Yeah. But I like them. Like I said, I know there's some people that are not a big fan, but I think the pros of those connectors far outweigh some of the negatives that people might come up with. So,
yeah, I take them and create like a block of eight and use those for our portable rotator cables at field day and stuff like that, so everything's interchangeable. And if you need an extra 50 or 100 feet, you can just patch it in.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't have to just be for power. So, absolutely.
Well, all right, man. Thank you. Do you have any other video, or I think you've done a good job explaining it tonight.
Yeah, I figured rather than play the video, because the video, you know, I ramble on a little bit. This is back in 2013 before I really did a nice tight job on the videos. I mean, there's good information in there, but I didn't want to waste the whole 9 minutes just kind of playing the video. So, you can certainly go ahead and watch it. You can watch the whole thing or just pick up a piece, but I didn't want to go and play anything like that, and just because there's nothing more than what I showed on the camera at this point.
So. All right. Well, I will say this: you did a great job being on pain medicine.
Yeah. The pain medicine's working right now, so I don't feel any
much
discomfort as long as I keep my tongue out of the cavity back there. So.
All right. Well, look. Feel free to leave whenever your pain medicine wears off, okay?
All right. Then we'll hang out for a while.
Okay. All right. All right, guys. Go check out his YouTube channel. And I guess if you just go to W2AE.
YouTube.com/W2AEW.
Right, yeah. Right there, they will find all your videos there. Okay. Very good.
Okay.
All right.
And
hey,
if
guys.
It's any consolation, I had my wisdom teeth pulled probably about 20, 30 years ago, maybe 35 years ago. I had them pull all four at once because I said, you're only getting one shot.
Yeah, well.
All right. Well, they did three of mine years and years ago. This last one has been hanging out for many years and finally got to the point where it was starting to have a little trouble. So they said, let's get rid of it now. So, but got me out of work half a day. So.
All right, guys, we'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away. Let's talk about a brand new ICOM radio. Get out and be active with ICOM's new IC705. The IC705 is your perfect QRP companion as you have base station features and functionality at the tip of your fingers in a portable package. It covers HF through 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in at just over 2 pounds with RF direct sampling for most of the HF bands and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz. It also has a large 4.3-inch color touchscreen with live band scope and waterfall. You get 5 watts with the BP272 and 10 watts with a 13.8-volt DC power supply. It has a micro USB connector, Bluetooth, and WLAN. Integrated GPS with antenna and a GPS logger. It has a micro SD card slot. And the ATM243 speaker microphone comes standard. The perfect accessory for the IC705 is the LC192 backpack. It has a special compartment for your IC705 and room for all your accessories. The IC705 now has received FCC certification, and we expect product to be shipping to dealers by the end of September. Visit www.icomamerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM radios.
LDG Electronics provides state-of-the-art antenna tuners for every amateur need. From QRP to QRO, fixed stations, portable and remote, an LDG tuner will match your radio to your antenna using our lightning-fast proprietary tuning algorithms. LDG is a family-owned and operated company dedicated to bringing innovative, quality products to the amateur market. All LDG products carry a full 2-year warranty that is fully transferable. Support is only a phone call or email away. We're always here to help you. Visit us on the web at ldgelectronics.com.
All right, we are back. And, hey, that was pretty good on the power pole. I started using them, and I tell you, you know, I used to just put, you know, lugs on the end and hook them on the back of the power supply, and then I'd add 4 or 5 radios, and I'd keep stacking those lugs up, and then I'd have to splice into the other wires, and it was starting to be a mess. But hey, I kind of like the power poles now. Hey, a couple cards this week, man. Robert W8KOU sent me a card. Look at there, up in Ohio, he sent me a card. And W8BDE. He is up in Akron, Ohio. He sent me a card, too. It's hard to see. So I got a couple cards this week. They're all my cards have been sent back out to you guys. Thank you for the cards. Okay, so let's do this. I invited a friend of mine, Skip Morris, K5FC, to be with us tonight. I've known Skip for a long, long time. We both worked at FedEx. He's he was a radio engineer at FedEx for several decades. I knew him that long, and I think prior to that he was in broadcasting and worked for one of the TV stations here. So he's got quite a background and a lot of experience, and we're going to see a lot of things that he's doing and he's done, and we're going to talk about, I think, some tower safety tonight. And I think he also has another thing that he's going to probably use to lead in, and also he's got a guest with him tonight. And I want to get you to introduce his guest. So let's do that, and then you can take it away, Skip. Go right ahead.
All right, Tom, thank you once again for the invitation here to address the group, the many, many hams, and I fully appreciate it. I've been a ham now for about 60 years. And grew up in the radio business in Memphis, Tennessee. And I have a guest here behind me, Ron Baker, WB4HFN. And Ron has been very active in the restoration and fixing of all the Drake equipment. And we all, and all of us that grew up as hams in the early days, we all knew Drake. You know, Bob Drake did a great job. And so I guess I worked with Tom there in Memphis at FedEx for many, many years, and retired here about 5 years ago. And we relocated from Memphis to Cookeville, Tennessee, which is halfway between Nashville and Knoxville. And we built a home over here. And I've got a 1,200 square foot radio room today, which has been a lot of fun. It took me a long time to put it all together. But that was my dream, and my dream came about. So, but I guess I'm going to do a little bragging here. I got to give you everybody a kind of a brief showing here of what I have put together. I've been a collector of Drake Collins Johnson. And, you know, like any of the guys that, and gals that have been around for a while, we all grew up on this hardware. And I've had this restored. Ron behind me did a lot of work on my Drake equipment. And also I had W0YVA up in Falls Church, Virginia, restored my Johnson Valiant and my Ranger, and the Collins as well. And I have done some of the stuff myself. And let's walk through a little bit of it. Once again, I got Tom said I have bragging rights tonight. So let's see if we can get this thing launched here. Let's see. All right, I guess Tom, do we have the picture online here? Can you see everything? Hello, Tom. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you're not sharing here yet.
Yeah. Okay. Can you hear me, Skip?
Yes, sir. I can.
Yeah. All I'm seeing right now is your passwords to your bank accounts.
What?
No, we're not seeing anything. All right. Did you hit the share screen?
Well, let me get to it here. Hang on.
And Ron's call was WB4HFN?
Yes. All right, this is not coming up. What is that? Share. All right.
Now, we know this works because we tested it earlier today.
Yep.
Yeah. What do they say about the demo mode of software? It always works in demo mode, but
yeah,
when you buy it, then, you know.
That's right. All right. This is important. I want us to see these pictures, so we're gonna have to get this working here.
Share
screen. Skip, do you see the button that says share screen?
Well, let's see.
Depending on how you got it, you may have to click the three dots for more. It might be hidden there.
Three dots.
It's on the bottom line on my screen.
All right, we edit. All right, we're not working here for some reason. Let's see.
We'll get it.
You can also try an Alt S.
An Alt S. Are you making that up, Glenn?
No. If I hover my mouse over my share screen, it says share is Alt
okay.
plus S.
All right. Skip, hold your Alt key down and hit S.
All right.
Alt S.
All right. Did that out there. Hang on, let's see.
Are you sure you're on a computer?
We had this before.
I know it. It worked before. We did all this.
Feedback.
We'll get it. As I told Skip, we have no deadline here. We can go 3 or 4 hours if we need to.
Yeah, because I'm leaving in about 10 minutes.
Well,
you going to show the same pictures that you got on the QRZ page, or you've got other pictures you want to show?
I've got other pictures.
He's got others, too. All right, look, we can do this. We can do this. Now,
yeah, Tom, you may need to allow.
It's already been done.
Oh, okay.
Here.
Yep, it's already been done. Now, I think you got it.
Looks that way.
Or is that something I did?
It's something you did. It's on your feed.
Well, that's interesting. Okay. All right. So, Skip, when you click on the little share screen, it does not do anything?
Well, I'm getting up on the right-hand top, share. And I'm getting a block of copy file, feedback, get apps in store. So, why is this not?
All right, so we've got some Zoom experts in the chat room. I want everybody, all the experts in the chat room to...
I think you're at the settings screen. You've got a screen there that should have all of our video up. And on the bottom of that screen, I got a green icon that says share screen.
Wait a minute. Hang on, guys. I think...
You got it.
All right, now let's get to the shots.
That's the ugly tower picture.
Yeah. Okay, let's get to. All
there
right,
you
still
go.
Up, guys.
Yeah, you've got your whole array of pictures now.
I think you're going to get it. Okay.
You see them? You got it?
We got it.
Okay, let me move over here. Okay, so y'all see this, I guess. This is kind of the front layout of the shack. And what you see here is a rack that really controls the whole room. And keep in mind, most of my stuff is vacuum tubes. So I bring everything up on a Variac. Everything, all of my amplifiers, all of my... And I've got 12... station set up in this room, okay? And let's go to the next slide here. Long way. Let's see, get you guys over here. All right, what you see here is the some of the Drake equipment over here on this table. L4B, several TR4Cs. I've got 2 Drake C-lines. And once again, Ron behind me, he restored all of this stuff, okay, and did an excellent job. And I'm a CW person, so what you see here, you see keys everywhere, okay? That's just the way I am. I'm operating right now from this location, and we're looking at the other side of the room. This is about a 1,200-square-foot radio room. Here's the C lines and all the other stuff with the L4B. And, on this table over here, and you'll see this. And this is the TR7 line and the L7 amplifier. And once again, guys, this stuff is just really, really nice. I've got 2, Collins, amplifiers here that are the 4 models, and I restored those myself. And then over here, you got the Collins S line, and I believe that if I remember right, this KWM2 was at the NASA space station down in Florida, which I acquired several years ago. Here is a Viking Valiant 75A4 Drake, or a the Ranger 75A4. These are restored up in Virginia, and I will tell you this: the man that did all this, he is very, very good, but he's not cheap. Not cheap at all. Another picture of one of the Collins in the rack with some of the stuff in here. Once again, my rotators and the Variax that control all of the 220, 120, because everything comes up on the rack on a Variax. You know, as we know, all of this stuff was built back in the 50s, and it had to be right on the primary voltage. A view from where I am now. This is my Collins my small little novice station, Drake 2C, ICO 720, which I restored from ground zero. I took it, tore it all apart, sent the chassis to have it remade for the copper, and brought it back in, built it back in as a kit, which was it was a fun project, but it really worked out nice. Here's the Drake TR7 line, and once again with the L4B, L7, and love it. It's absolutely a great station. Ron behind me, he rebuilt that. That stage, okay. Another view of this, Collins S-line. Once again, 12 stations here on the air. This is the last project that I built, a 4-1000 amplifier, and it's, let's see, you'll see it later in another picture, but it's on the QRZ.com website, and it worked out beautifully, all rebuilt. The cabinet was all repainted by a professional, and it's just been a fun station to operate. So, do we have any questions before I really jump into what I want to talk about tonight?
Well, let's see. Any questions in the chat room? We've got a lot of people interested in restoring equipment, and they've been discussing that. You got a nice variation of equipment there. I love the Collins stuff you had. That kind of reminds me of the radios I saw in the Air Force when I didn't have a good sideband rig when that KWM2 came out, and the 75 series. Those are really nice radios.
Well, restoring the Collins amplifiers was a very big project to everybody, because that amplifier was very complex, and to get to it, to rebuild it, it was very difficult, because the way they built that thing was it was hard to get to everything, and you've got this deck. The RF deck is external from the power supply, and they've got a circuit in there that is a delay circuit. So when you turn it on, it went through a 3-minute pause period before you could turn on the high voltage. And it was a nice amplifier. It uses a 4CX1000, and those tubes are very good, but it's not a high-powered amplifier, but it's a well-made, it's a workhorse.
Hey, Skip, question chat room, please. Again, state the EF Johnson expert that you mentioned.
That is, Bob, what's Bob's last name? He's up W0YVA, W0 Yankee Victor Alpha. And he is very well known up in Falls Church, Virginia. And he restores the Johnson, the Collins, probably just about anything you want to restore. But I will tell you this, if anybody is interested in him working for you to do this, there are two questions you don't ask him. When is it going to be ready, and how much is it going to cost? So,
if you have to ask, you can't afford it, right?
Right. I will tell you this, that the 75A4s were completely stripped down, completely self-screen painted, and the price after restoration was $4,000 each. Now, that receiver was a whole lot less when it was new. And the Viking Valiant was very close to the same price. But keep in mind, everyone, this stuff was built or restored better than it was built. I will tell you that. And I've had them for somewhere around 10 years. Never had a problem. Never. Unless a tool went bad.
How do you keep your shack so clean?
Because I'm anal.
And on that note, I've got to run and do my presentation. We'll catch you all next week.
All right. We'll see you, Glenn.
All right, guys.
Take care, Glenn.
Okay. And
So, Skip, you mentioned your 4-1000 was not a high power amplifier, but gee, I mean, that's a 1,000 watt plate dissipation. That's high.
That was the 4CX1000, which is the Collins 32S1.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the one that you were building there with the 4-1000.
No, that's a little bit more than the. If anyone is here that's had all of that experience,
yeah,
probably knows very well that is not a low power amplifier. Okay?
It's not. With a 1,000 watt plate dissipation, I think you can get quite a bit out of that.
Let me bring that up, and I'll show you. Because these pictures are a little bit out of order. And let me see if I can see this guy. All right. Here's the 4-1000. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Keep in mind, this amplifier belonged to originally a man in Memphis built. This was Johnny Watson, for Golf Delta.
It was
built probably in the early 60s, mid-60s. And I acquired this from a K4XO, and I brought it back with me and tore it completely apart, took it all the way down to nothing, and stripped it, rebuilt it, shined everything up. The amplifier is very robust. And I got it back on the air back in this last March. And it's just a rocking amplifier. It does so well on the air. And it's got the rotary inductor, so it operates all bands. And Johnny Watson wound the transformer. He wound the swinging choke. And it's just a great project, great amplifier. The cabinet is the Bud cabinet, which I took away and restored that. Had a company there in Memphis do the powder coat painting and put this all back together. And everyone that's ever had any experience with a 4-1000, it goes without saying, it's just a very, very nice amplifier. And once again, this is my last project. I will not build any more transmitters, receivers, and amplifiers. I'm done with that. This is it. I'm over with it, but I love it to death. Any questions there?
Well, you have enough there. I don't think you need to do any more right now.
What do you do for, with all the rigs and stuff there, what do you do for antenna switching? I mean, I'm assuming you don't have an antenna matched to every rig and that you've you kind of multiplex them out to the antenna farm that you've got. So I wonder what you do there.
All right. Okay. So, Alan, I use two switches. I've got the this is the 8-position switch, which is the MFJ. Okay, this one here. So I switch up to 7 rigs on this one. Then I switch over to a Drake. switch device down here, and so I take on five more. So I can switch all of those from this rack.
Okay.
And a transmit receiver, they go right through there. They all go to the tuner, which is the one that's a, what is it, PowStar? PowStar.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Great. Let me tell you, I recommend that wholly. That thing works so nice. I've had it many, many years. And so I'm running everything through that, but I use this guy for the PowStar to match any mismatch that I might have. But I've got the beams, and those will come up later when I should do the presentation.
Okay.
So I've got the Green Heron tuner or rotary for one of the antennas, and then I've got gotta stop and think. Anyway, this one right here. I'll come up with it. Okay. Well, that's how I change the rigs in the room.
Okay. Nice.
Well, we've got so much there. We can't count on you remembering everything.
When I'm away from it during the summertime, I forget what I've got. But now in the wintertime, ask me this again.
Now, do you have any heat down there in the basement?
Well, not really. If anybody has a basement, we never change the temperature on here because it's pretty much constant. It's consistent because the basement keeps the same temperature year-round.
Cool.
And the radios, they don't really create that much heat, actually.
Yeah.
So, but I work CW 150% of the time. And so, very little sideband.
Yeah, so all the microphones up on a shelf all by themselves over there.
Yeah, I know. So, but CW's always been my life.
Nice.
Hopefully it'll never go away. So, any more questions, and I'll roll to my real presentation here.
Does Electro Voice 664 mic use a preamp?
No.
No preamp, okay.
They've got, some of those amplifiers do have preamps, but I never, because radios today, you don't really don't need a preamp. The audio input's very sensitive.
Okay. All right.
So, are we ready to jump into really what I want to talk about?
Yeah, let's talk about, I guess, tower safety. You have some experience. I know you said you're not a tower expert, but you've definitely had a lot of experience over the years and learned a lot, and you have some things to show and tell us.
I do. All right. First of all, what I'm about to bring up, I will explain a little bit here what has happened here, and I'm not going to take any questions. I'm just going to lay this out, and because there's certain things that are still pending here. Okay, 2 years ago, here at this location, at this QTH, we were going to put up two towers, one at 90 feet, one at 70 feet, run 45. And all of this was brought in here from Memphis. It was a September day, a very beautiful, nice day. The weather was very comfortable. So we brought an individual here from away from here and out of town, and about 30 years old, very nice kid. He had a lot of experience on towers. He actually did cell sites. So everything was a very good day. We were up to 80 feet. We were at 4:30 in the afternoon. And I have to tell you, there was a problem. We got to the point where we were pulling up the last section of 90 feet. And without getting into full details, we had one. Ron recommended two guy wires for a 90-foot tower, one at 40 and one at 80 for a 90-foot tower, which I complied with exactly what they recommended. We had a problem, and the tower, we lost the guy wire going up, the one guy wire that was up. The tower fell, you can see it. The young man died in my backyard. So it was very traumatic, as you well know, as you can, you know, imagine. But, you know, I won't get into other than we had a guy wire fail. And this took, it was a painful thing. It took us, I actually almost reached a point after 60 years of being a ham, I was going to get out of radio and just call it quits. And it's a very bad experience, guys. And I, you know, I've been putting up towers since 1961 as a kid before I made it to high school. I always had a dream that I would fall off of the tower. I never thought about the tower falling. And this did. And as you can see on this picture, the last section was the one that you see that's vertical. And the top of the tower never made it to the ground, but this section did. So, and you know, it was bad. And it took me a long, long time to recover. And I did. I was told not to give it up. So I moved on. And to give you, let me move this over here. This is what the tower looked laying over. And basically, my point here tonight is to talk about tower safety. And basically, that's it. Once again, please, no one ask about what happened. I know what happened. Many people do know what happened, but it happened. It was a very bad thing. So anyway, let's move on. Okay. So let's talk about guy wires. Okay. Here's one of my guys. It's an 8-inch I-beam. It's 6 feet in the ground, 30-inch bore, and 30 inches of concrete. Now, I've always been an advocate of strong guys, and I've been an advocate of I-beams for guy wires, and I strongly believe in them, and they do. They work very well. And so a lot of the guys, gals, whatever, put guy wires on whatever. And let me tell you, it's so important to do proper guying, because if you try to cut corners, something eventually is going to happen. And if you can't afford, if you want to cut corners or the guy points, you're, and pardon my French here, but you're a fool, because guy wires are so important here. And there's a formula for every foot above the ground level. You need to be so many feet below the ground. What that formula is, I don't know, but I will tell you my experience in all the years and all the towers. I put up so many 100-plus foot towers on 45 that you can't go too deep, and you can't go too bored. Your bore can't be too much. So go do it. Double up. If you can't afford it, don't do it, or find a way to afford it, okay? I'll take a question on any of that, Tom, if you want, before I change pictures.
Yeah, you know, Skip, one thing you said to me one time we were talking was, you know, hey, a lot of hams are cheap, and we'll cut back $200 just to save $200 on something like this.
That's true. And, hey, in the early days, I did the same thing. I actually guide a 50-foot tower, run 25, on a fence post, you know, a chain link mm-hmm. fence post. But I was a kid, didn't know any better. And thank God nothing happened to me. The tower didn't fall, but I did drop a mass pipe through the roof of my house and went down into the bed. So my dad, oh, I thought I lost radio at that time. So, and things happen. So, all right, this was a guy. This is one of my guy points. And what I did, this is an equalizer plate, but we welded a 1-inch rod here. The the rod with the, you know, the, what is it? The rod that goes out. Anyway, it's a, yeah, I'll find it here. Hang on. All right, this is the way we put these towers up. There's two towers at this location, and this is what they call the pin plate method. With this, there is no tower underground. Okay, it's all sitting on top of the concrete pad. I do not favor a tower under the ground in the concrete because of two reasons. Number one, the tower can snap. Number two is water accumulates down the rods and will freeze, rust, and eventually break off. Last year, I think there was a tower up in New England somewhere that actually they were taking it down. It got to 30 or 40 feet, and it fell over because they were rusted out. Nobody knew it. One of the people died, and one was hurt very seriously, okay? So I stay away from it. The guy wires hold the tower up if you're going with a guy tower. Ron towers are very, very, very good, but you got to put it in there correctly. Number two is that Ron recommends a number of guy wires per foot. And after this accident, I disagree with Ron. If you think I'm crazy, I'm not, because I've had a bad experience here. I will not go with Ron's specs. If they want two guys, I'm going to put three. And we're going to show you how we did this. Any questions so far? Okay.
There was a question if the manufacturers publish formulas for the guy wire spacing and strength.
Well, I have gone to the Philly Strand, which I've never used before this setup. And I really think that Philly Strand is as strong, if not stronger, than the steel wire. It's very robust. It does an excellent job, especially with the type of tie-in you do with the wraparound. Because the harder you pull, the tougher it gets. And this tower that fell had Philly Strand. The Philly Strand never buckled, never broke. It did the whole job. So, once again, I still disagree with Ron's two guy, I'll go to three. I feel that way now. Here's another guy wire. And another thing, everyone, keep them low. Don't get these things up 5 and 6 feet above the ground if you just think you have to mow under them, because keep them low, because look at the physics of this thing. The lower it is, the stronger it is. And the deeper you go, the more strong it gets. These were welded rods here. Is all this showing up on the pictures okay there, Tom?
Yeah, it's doing fine.
Okay. Also, you want to safety harness this thing. And let me get to the next picture. Let's see what's going to come up. Okay, you got your equalizer plates here. Also here, now we did weld the eye hook. That's what I'm looking for, the eye hook on here for the equalizer plate. And we drilled through the I-beam, and we put in the shackle. That's a backup, okay? And I'll show you why you need a backup. We're getting to something else here. Let me get to the rest. I'm going to fast forward through some of this. Here we go. Let's go back. All right. Here's the now this guy wire, which I think it now is the best way to go. You drill through the I-beam. You put your eye hook, your eye bolt through there, and I recommend a 3/4 to 1 inch, depending on the size of your tower. So that way, it won't come. It won't break. But this is your backup. This is where you back up and take out the turnbuckles, so that they're not. If something happened to a turnbuckle, if it was compromised, you got this backup, and I'll show you how we did that. This is where they. Let me get this moved around. Here's where it goes through the shackle, and it goes through here, down here, through here, and it's tied back here. If you have a failure here, a shackle bolt, a bolt back here, you're still backed up. Okay, nothing can come. It just won't happen. It's backed up. A lot of folks want to run a guy wire through the turnbuckles. That's fine. That's good. You can do both if you want. But if you had a bolt break here or here or here, you've lost a guy wire. Okay? So I've not run something. If somebody's going to twist on those, so what? If they twist it, you're still backed up here. Okay? You can't have too much redundancy. Okay? If you're going to put guy wires up, strongly recommend the yellow plastic wrapping around the guys, because if somebody's going to go in there and cut your yard, you want everybody to see you got a guy wire. You don't want anything that can't be seen. I strongly recommend the guy points having them being marked. Here's how you tether your Philly strand to a steel guy. You've got to have a way to go from Philly strand to guy to get to the turnbuckles. Nice shuckle. These things are huge. They're just very dependable. So always do your turnbuckles and your this is a way you connect them together. And you can keep an eye on things. You can know what's going on, okay? So this is this is my opinion, okay? It's not, maybe the manufacturer may say yes, may say no, but this is my opinion. Any questions so far? Nope. Tom, are we getting any messages coming through on your website?
Well, there's a lot of discussion about guying, and people are talking about what they've done and so forth. So, okay, here's one question. Please ask your opinion on Pyrod towers. Pyrod towers? Yeah, you know what they're talking about? P-I-R-O-D?
Alan, do you...
Do you know
you
Alan?
Get that question. I've always had... Always my experience in the past has been with the Ron 45. That's... The Pyrod is... That tower.
I guess the Pyrods don't have hollow legs. They're steel rods.
Yeah. I guess the only thing I gathered. I'm not a tower expert, so I couldn't answer that. But I kind of gather from the comments that the Pyrod doesn't have the problem of water gathering inside of a hollow leg that can rust out. So I don't know if it's a more of an angle iron or a solid type of a thing, or what it looks like.
Now, another question was, what would be used to anchor a guy in rocky soil? I guess you just got to dig down deep enough and get some concrete in the ground, right?
Well, and Tom, over here in Middle Tennessee, a lot of rock in the ground, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're on the plateau, and there's a lot of rock here. And we were able to, we did a core bore. I brought an electrical company out here that used an auger, and we were able to bore straight down without any problem of hitting any rock. Now, you know, I've never had any rock experience coming from West Tennessee. So here, we were lucky we didn't have any problems here. How would I have handled that? You know, maybe you go to a dead man. Maybe you get a backhoe in here and you'd actually dig the deep, big dead man type scenario. That's just my opinion.
There was a question on tower heights. Your two towers, didn't you say, what, 80 and 90 feet?
Correct.
Okay. They were asking how tall.
Yeah. Well, I scaled back after the accident. I went to 270s. I backed away from the 90. Only okay. because I was kind of shell-shocked.
Yeah.
And so I went to 270s, which was fine. And I'll show you the antennas and how that went up. There's not a really – look at the band you're on. Look at the wavelength and go do your math, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not – sometimes it's just unnecessary and more expensive to go up higher. You don't really need it as long as you're – if you're a wavelength high, you know – talk to the antenna experts, and I once again I'll show you what we ended up doing here.
It looks like Bill in the chat room posted a link to a kind of a data sheet for the Pyrod towers, and a quick glance at that, it looks like that they use solid rod construction, so there's no hollow rod to collect any water. They're all solid bars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if I had to do it all over again, I think I would have bitten down on the bullet and gone with a self-supporting 100-foot tower, like a cell site, okay? But, no, I didn't. I stayed with what I was familiar with. Here's a view of one of the guy points, and you see how it turned out. This guy point is about 24 inches above the ground, and it turned out beautifully. I mean, it's very strong and very robust, and I have all the confidence in the world of this guy on the guy point. I strongly, strongly recommend, if you can, go with the I-beams. I-beams are tremendous. You've got a lot of points of welding. You got a lot of points of drilling. And let me tell you, an I-beam, that's what they use in structural buildings, and they work. And they're superb. And I used them in Memphis. I used them in Hernando, where I lived down in Mississippi. So I'm an I-beam fan.
Yeah, can you talk about how you attach the Philly strand to, because it looks like it's more of a guy wire going through, you know, the kind of half moon at the end, but then, right there, but then I see the Philly strand coming out. But is it just a set of those kind of U-bolt structures that join those together?
Let's see. I'm not sure if I've got pictures of the Philly strand.
The one picture you had that showed the last one you showed that had the finished guy that you were talking about. Looks almost like that the Philly strand was just running parallel with the steel wire, and you just had those U-bolt structures on.
The Philly strand is let's see. Once again, no, this is the best picture I think I can. Well, no way, I think I've got. Let's see.
Yeah, the one you had, we were talking about, yeah, that one there, because it almost looks like you had a, maybe you can see part of it there on, you know, below the yellow.
The Philly strand is, if you go to DX Engineering, it's a wrap, it's a thimble, and the Philly strand is wrapped around. Or the wire of the Philly strand is wrapped around it. It's like a snake, you know, to pull in wire. It wraps, you know, you put your wire, it wraps around. So the more you pull, the tension of that becomes stronger.
That's kind of like the Chinese finger cuff type of thing.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yes,
got
sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir, Alan. That's correct.
Okay.
And I've never used Philly strand before this, and I think it's the greatest thing. Now, some people have their opinion about that. Do they need Philly strand to isolate your guy wires from the antennas? Maybe yes, maybe no. But it was available. I tried it, and I'm sold on it. So it was developed. It had a purpose, and then if you go, you may have to do some research on it. You know, when it was developed, for what reason. To isolate the antenna from ground levels, okay? But you can't break it. When this tower fell, the failure strand never had a problem. It was the steel that broke, okay? So, all right, let me go to... All right, now, my first set of guys are what I call safety guys. So when I went up to 30 feet, these guys got put on. Now, these are shackles. These are not guy wire. These are not really for the we'll see them here in a minute. But these are shackles, and they're big enough to go all the way around the tower leg. And this is how the first set of guys go up, because you really don't have a lot of, when you're rotating an antenna where the tower wants to twist, okay? Now at this level, these are 30 feet, I think. So I did use the shackles here. And there's where you can see the Philly strand. Kind of, this is the, and we'll see if we can get to see a better picture. I never thought about taking those kind of pictures. Let's see. All right, let's go past that point. Let's go. All right, this is a 70-foot tower. Three set of guys, and these are what they call the blank tonight on that. If you can tell, these are the torque arms. That's what I was looking for. These are the torque arms. So if you're going to put up a tower, and it costs you money, you better use torque arms, because they actually take the strength and they divide it up between the tower legs. So they're actually pulling against each other, not on the legs themselves. Am I getting that point with the torque arms?
Mm-hmm.
So torque arms are very important, because if you look at this antenna, which is a JK30, this is a very heavy beam. It's a 40 and 30 meter beam, and it weighs 130 or 40 pounds, and it's got a lot of torque when it turns. So all of the torque is taken up from the torque arms, because they pull against each other, not on the legs of the towers. So I can't say more than get torque arms. Don't cut your price. Don't get cheap. Use torque arms. DX Engineering has them. So I use them on the first of the top and the second set on those towers. The first set took the shackles, because you really don't have a lot of torque on the tower at the bottom level. It's all up here mainly. Okay, now let's see if amplifier. Let's get out of that. We've already done that.
Yeah, it looks like there was one more question Chuck had in the chat about aren't the shackles going to dent the tower tubes?
No, they're so big. I mean, they're huge. These are the 3/4 inch, I think. They're very large. They don't affect the tower. It's better than using the wire, okay? Because, and once again, you use the thimbles with the shackles, just like we did on the guy points on the down at the ground level. So they absorb a lot. And I keep a very close eye on these, okay? I monitor. Always check your towers. Pick a point. Always keep an eye on these towers with your guy wires if you're using guy tower. I do it every 3 months, every quarter. I go up, I look at them, and make sure that nothing's left. Always keep your tower, your guy points painted with the paint that you can use it and get it Home Depot or Lowe's. It's a paint that's galvanized paint. It's a galvanized paint. Always do that. Okay. Well. sorry for these things not being in. I had something. I want to get to the very front of this. Let's talk about climbing, okay? All right, this is something I learned recently within the last year. These towers were put up a year ago. There's a ham in Crossville, Tennessee, and his name is call sign W9 Whiskey Bravo Alpha, and his name is Dale Darling. He's extremely smart, and he's been doing this for a long time, okay? He came up with a plan, and he gave this to me. And what you're looking at is, yes, this is my safety belt. And, yes, this is what goes around the tower and keeps me up. This is the lifesaver, guys, gals. This is a lifesaver. When you're climbing, never, never go up unconnected. You want to be connected 100% of the time. If you're going between guy wires or just climbing, you take this guy right here and you snap on. You snap on above your head as far as you can reach. You're always connected. If you go above a guy wire, you always stay connected. Never, 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 never go up a tower or come down a tower without being connected. If you send Dale an email note, I guess you can look him up in QRZ, ask him about it's called like a J-hook, and I'll show you a picture here, a very close picture, and he put this together for me after our accident and told me how this works. And let me tell you, it makes you feel so secure when you know that you're connected twice, you know, if not this guy right here. And he thinks and swears that you need two of these on your belt. And he's right. He's very good. Here is like the snapshot of this particular device. And there's the number on it. And they're out there. They're all over the place. And what this number means, you can pull it up on eBay and you can find it. But this is a very, I don't climb a tower without this guy, never, because I know when I put this on, even if the main belt, this failed at all, I'm connected here. I may swing around a lot up there with that, but let me tell you, it will protect you, okay? And how many people have ever had two locks on a tower, on a belt, and worked up there? I never did until I got this. I was stupid not doing it. So I really, 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 really recommend being connected twice, okay? Kind of wait, Ron. I mean, if y'all get another chat, you might ask me a question about this. Nothing, Tom?
Well, they're talking about the hook there, and one guy says he's got a belt. He's got two of them on it, and you know,
that's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, I remember in my 30s when I put up a 90-foot tower at my home, and I climbed it, and I put it up, and I can remember right now the feeling I had when I unhooked that belt, and to go above a next set of guys. That's a funny feeling, man. You know, all you're doing, you're hanging on there with one arm while you're trying to use the other arm to get the belt around, you know, the tower.
You could have a stroke. You could have, yeah. I mean, so much it could happen to your body that would, you'll fall free. I mean, you're gone. And so.
Well, yeah, you know, hey, let me just say this. We did crazy things when we were young. When I had several repeaters over the years, and we started out with a repeater there on a 90-foot tower. We had two antennas. And I can remember a couple of instances where we actually climbed past a wasp nest to go higher. Now, what do you think about that?
Yep. I mean,
and I tell you another one. Did you ever know Bob Gruner, W4UFT?
No, I don't. Did not.
Well, he's passed, but Bob was a friend, and I went up this one winter. There was ice on the tower, and I went up and put the top antenna, I think, on. It was cold, ice on the antenna. Bob put the second one up, and he went up, and he kept staying up there. And I said, Bob, what's wrong? What's wrong? You know, he wasn't moving. He says, I'm warming my hands. And he actually swallowed a lock washer while he was up there.
Oh. Well, everybody, I don't know if you read it in ARRL, but up in Maine, this month, a ham was up at 80 feet, and it was an N1 or something, and he fell from 80 feet from the top, and he died, but we have no details. We don't. There was no descriptive reason why he fell. They said he had a harness on, but not knowing what. If he had been hooked on twice, he probably wouldn't have fallen. I mean,
yeah. And Skip, just one more thing. You know, hooked on twice don't always save you. There's a video out there. I think down in South America, a guy was putting up a tower, and the gin pole turned, and it started falling. And it hit the tower below him, and that bent the tower, and the tower came down with him attached to it.
Yeah, well.
So, you know, anything can happen. Like you say, man, you got to prepare for everything.
Well, I feel more secure when I've got two points hooked up, and I understand the gin pole scenario. But my point here is tonight is to emphasize safety, safety, safety.
Yep.
You know, you need redundancy. One time, one hook is not enough. You need two hooks, three hooks, okay? And Dale, WBA, will be an advocate to tell you need two of these hooks, and he's right. And I know it takes more time to go up and come down with that, but, hey, it's your life. It's your life, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's no second chance. So, anyway. Okay, there's the number on that. And so let's talk about antennas. Let's get to this right here. I got this idea since the accident, instead of putting a beam up on a taking it up on ropes, that I would try a crane. And I tell you what, everybody, guess what? The crane is the way to go.
Oh, yeah.
At $150 an hour, they came out here, and I was fully ready for them. We put two monster antennas up in 2 hours. It cost me $300. And I got to tell you that it was well worth the money. So let's see if I can... Can you hear me all right, Tom?
Oh, yeah, we hear you.
All right. I let them lift the beam up. This is the JK-30. But I went ahead and went, let's see, I got another. Let's see.
That was short.
Let's go to...
Ran into a small snag, needed a second rope to make the... Come on up. That's right.
Stand up there.
So they needed a second rope to get that antenna up straight.
Well, they needed it to kind of hold it left.
anyway, the guys down at the on the ground are busy attaching a second rope to pull the antenna straight up so that it doesn't get tipped or damaged.
Now, that doesn't look too safe there.
Good morning. I'm good, sir. How are you? Find yourself a comfortable chair to have a seat.
Where's the National Ceremony?
Yeah, right. Well, he told me he wasn't climbing that tower.
So, Skip, that video was sideways.
Yeah, yes, I see that. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how to load to do it. So let's
So there's a question of what type of heights can a crane like that reach? How high?
Well, Tom, it depends. What I wanted to bring out there was a boom lift crane, not a crane that somebody could put a basket in, okay? But we ended up, I couldn't find one. So we had to go with the we had to go with that one, but they'll vary.
Ran into a small snag. Needed a second rope to make.
All right, we've already seen that video. Yeah, there you go.
Now keep in mind that I had I was hooked onto the mast pipe.
That's a pretty big beam.
That's the JK antenna. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's... Yeah, that's the JK antenna.
So did you need two people up there to do that?
Well, the basket, of course, is part of the crane company, and they weren't going to let me go up by myself. I'm the one in the orange shirt.
Yeah.
Just the rule of their, okay. You know, their insurance. I had to go up with them. Well, that's just fine, and it worked out just great.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is with the the crane, if once again, this is the first time I ever did a crane installation with my stuff, and I will never put an antenna up without a crane ever again, because this is a way to go.
Oh, yeah.
And once again, spend the money. Spend the money, because it's well worth the extra money to get this done and without any injuries or any equipment failures or any of that. It just worked out wonderful. Let's see. And then we... and this is how we did it with the basket. This antenna weighs 130 pounds. It's very, very, very heavy, very well constructed. So if anyone ever wants a 30, 40-meter beam, I really recommend it. It's just done a real good job.
So that's a 40-meter?
Yes, sir. Yeah, okay. It is. But I made JK antenna. After I got the antenna, And I called JK. I said, look, I said, I don't agree with a couple of things you did here. So I forced him to make some changes in the design of this antenna.
Okay.
So anyway, but it's very, very nice antenna. I got it for 40. And so let me get to, I got more of the, now, okay, that's the, got to stop and look. JK. JK. All right, maybe you can see how the Philly strand is connected to the supports for
the torsion bars.
Or the torsion arms.
Yeah, I see the kind of spiral around it there.
And this, the distance from here to here is about maybe close to 35 inches or something like that. And to put this Philly strand on that wrap is so easy, much easier than if you're using wire. It didn't take long at all. And it works great. Now, this is the 20-meter beam that went up on the other tower. Once again, we use the crane on this one. This is a 20-meter wide-spaced 20-meter beam, 30-foot boom. And it's back to the – I guess that's all the pictures I had on it. But, you know, I guess my whole point here, everyone, is that go the extra mile, spend the extra money, because in my whole life, as many years of putting antennas and beams up, never did I ever dream or even to think anybody would get hurt and be so bad as what happened here. So, you know, I can't say it anymore.
All right, Skip. Well, we covered a lot tonight, and I think a lot of people now are discussing this and understand how they need to really take it seriously. And when you're young, you don't do a lot of that taking seriously stuff. You know, you think it's nothing's going to happen to me. Boy, I tell you, if I knew then what I know now, I would not have put my own tower up. We need to bring your picture back in. Let's see if we can figure out how to do that.
Maybe I can
do it. I don't know. Let me see if I can do it.
I can probably do it.
I did it. I was able to do it here. Now I might have to adjust it. All right. So,
how about that?
That's good. Yeah, that's real good.
Anyway, I guess, you know, ham radio has been fun. It's been if you have an accident like what we had here, it will set you back, really set you back.
Yeah, I know it bothered you for a long time. I was talking to another friend of yours, and I know you went through a rough time there.
I did.
But you gotta keep going, you know.
But we need to do is our best to educate the hams about towers and how a safe tower is a good tower. Okay. A badly put together design can be catastrophic.
Well, all right. Well, Skip, thank you so much for coming on tonight and showing us this and talking about it. We'll get you back in here again sometime, and maybe we'll get you in here when you get your station in operation here. And it's in operation now, but maybe you can demo it for us some night, you know.
Well, if the bands would ever clear up, I would get back.
Yeah, I think they're getting a little bit better. I've noticed lately they're a little bit better, but they're still not great, are they?
No,
Can you remember? Hey, man, can you remember some old times, maybe in the 60s, when you could talk anywhere in the world?
Well, yeah. I mean, back in the 60s, I would skip a half part of school just to work DX on 20 meters in the morning because it was so active.
Yeah, I know.
However, this past winter, 20 was just blasting wide open from about 7 o'clock until about 9 o'clock here. And at night, 40 was opening up about 4 o'clock up until 7, and it was good. So I'm looking forward to this winter.
It's getting better.
Getting back into it.
Tonight, after our net, there was a station in Rome came on 40 meters, booming in here, man. He was loud.
Well,
yeah.
Anyway, well, I guess, Tom, thank you so much for letting me share my experience, be it as bad as it was, because I want to help anybody. And if I can answer any questions, go to QRZ, pull up my email, send me something, and I'll answer whatever I can. But I will not talk about the accident that happened here because it's still, there may be some stuff still ongoing, and I don't really want to get into that, okay?
Yep. All right. Well, thank you so much, man. Enjoyed it.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. All right, guys. Well, I think we've just about done a night's worth of show here. It was pretty interesting tonight. Not sure what we'll have next week. If you got any ideas, send us a note. If you got ideas or want to come on the show, I'm sure Alan is going to have something just super next week. I don't know what it is. But
I don't know what it is yet either, so we'll figure it out. But if anybody listening or watching, you got some ideas of what you'd like to see on a Tech Tips segment, let me know. I've got a list of things that we may pick from here. We knocked off one of them, the PowerPole one, on my list today. So see what we do next week.
Yeah, I was looking at them. There's a number of very interesting videos there that I know that people would love to hear about.
Hey, Tom. Yeah. I mean, Alan.
Yeah.
Hey, those connectors, they are awesome, okay? I've been using them ever since they came out. And it took me a while to get the positive and the negative in the right, so when I plugged it into the box, that they matched up, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, and I went out immediately and got the crimper set.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that I think that's the most awesome connector that ever came out. Okay.
Yeah, I like them. Like I said, I'm a fan of them, and I kind of switched everything over in my shack and things like that. And I do a little bit of portable operating too. So with the batteries that I have, and the chargers that I have, and the radios that I have that go well with all that stuff. And I've got one of those little monitors that goes in line to tell you, how much charge you're putting into a battery. I put, so many watt hours into the charge of the battery, little monitor thing, and everything's got power poles on it. So I can just plug and play, very simply and very easily.
You know what would be nice on those if the manufacturer would come out with a current monitoring meter on that device so you can see exactly what you're pulling overall.
Yeah, the RC industry, like the remote control industry, actually has these little things. I've got one. I can't remember who it's by. Maybe I'll pick it up for next week. You plug it in. It tells you the terminal voltage. Tells you which way the current's going, and then we'll also give you kind of a running tally of amp hours going in either direction, whether in terms of what you're pulling out of the battery or what you're putting into it when you're charging it. And it's just a little self-powered thing. As soon as you plug it in, it comes up. It's got an LCD display on it. It's pretty cool.
Hey, I've really enjoyed your presentation tonight on this.
Thank you.
You know, I don't know what happened. Zoom has worked really well tonight. But after we did Skip's presentation, it's not switching now. I'm having to manually switch the speaker to come up full screen. So, I've been playing with it here. I can't figure out how to get the automatic switching to work again, but who knows? Okay. All right. Well, Skip, thank you, man. All right. Let me sign off the show here, and we'll see what's up. We're going to try to start giving out some prizes maybe every month here on the show and get Hambot cranked back up again. And since we're not doing any Ham Fest to give out prizes, we might start trying to do some during our weekly show. I know John, let's see, John won the multimeter last week, KC7DR, I think. I saw a picture on Facebook. Boy, he was so proud of that free meter. He posted a picture and everything of it. Now, John, you take care of that meter, man. I suggest you throw it in your toolbox or something you pick up. You don't have to wrap it up or put anything around it. Just throw it in there, man. But it'll work. Hey, it's a good meter. It'll work. All right, guys, let's do this, and then we're going to close the show here. Let's see.
So you're saying I can ask this cat any question?
The cat is connected to the computer. So just type in the questions. It will read his mind. There's the answer code.
You're the man. I've been looking for this for weeks.
All right. Good night to everybody out there. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget 40 Meter Net next week, right before the show at 5:30 p.m. Central Time, 7180. See you later.
73. All right.
73, guys. Thank you.
Let's see. Okay. Yeah.